letter stories. Remember, these are parables, and we believe that God uses these parables to reveal truth to us. But he also says this, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. So you have to come with ears to hear, eyes to see. And that's the prayer, is that God would use these parables to open us up to new insights and truth about Jesus. And, you know, the context for Luke chapter 18 is, it's really, this is for his disciples. And here's what he knows. They're going through a hard time, and they will go through a hard time. And, you know, as you think about this, he's trying to get them to, hey, who are you? What is your identity? How are you going to be, how are you going to be defined? This week I got to juggle in front of the three-year-old class. Very exciting for me. I never get to do this very much anymore. So I had three baseballs, and I needed to tell them. I mean, Pastor Frank was coming in. Tell us a little bit about the church. So I got a good 3.5 minutes in to these three-year-olds, a solid 3.5 minutes, man, powerful stuff. And then they lost interest, right? So I'm like, okay. And so I started juggling balls, and I had brought up my old clubs and started juggling, and, you know, they were pretty excited about it. If I do say so myself, yeah, sorry. That sounded weird for me to say that. But then one of the boys afterwards, he came up to me, and he's like, Pastor Frank, do I call you Pastor Frank or do I call you Juggler Frank now, right? Like, how am I going to refer to you? You've, like, you know, changed my image of you. But identity matters, and identity in the face of a trial and oppression. I mean, shoot, what was it? It was last week, 3 hours, maybe 3 hours, 2 o'clock. And you look on your phone and you think, wait a second, what? Are you kidding me? Kobe Bryant? I mean, this you know, NBA superstar, the sport, you know, worldwide megastar, he's died? I mean, he you know, his helicopter crashed, and then not only that, he was with his daughter, his 13-year-old daughter. Are you kidding me? You know, I've heard celebrities on television this week speak more about, reference more God and prayer and church more than I think I have in the past year. I mean, people are shaken by this. I mean, you look and you see what? Thousands of people pouring to the Staples Center, you know, taking their flowers and their Kobe jerseys. You know, what is happening? I mean, why did this tap into our heartbeat, our national heartbeat, so much? I mean, we love sports, right? But there's something about this. You could feel, you know, I mean, shoot, I was rattled, no doubt. But you could feel our nation just be, whoa. This guy was 41 years old. He was a good father. What is happening? I don't understand this. Wait, you're telling me that in the past 2 weeks it's gone from 2,000 cases to 5,000 cases, to 10,000 cases, to 14,000 cases of this coronavirus? What is going on? Now, 200, now there's over 300 people that have died from this, and we don't know how to contain it. We don't know what's going to happen, how this thing metastasizes, or how it spreads, whatever. I mean, there is an angst that's going on. And Jesus gives us parables. Jesus gives us stories to attach to give us truth, to give us true action. And so I want us to hear this parable in the context of our world today, right? I know many of us would want to just dive in and say, okay, I'm just going to escape into the Super Bowl today and just kind of live, you know, I just want Andy Reid to get his first title, please, you know, and then find ourselves in that and escape to that. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying a game tonight. But there's something going on here. And people feel rattled. And Jesus knows this, and he's looking at his disciples. And we'll start Luke 18. This is verse 1. Then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. I mean, there's a thesis statement for our world this morning. To always pray and not give up. Here it goes. He said, here's the parable. In a certain town, there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with the plea, "Grant me justice against my adversary." For some time, he refused. But finally, he said to himself, "Even though I don't fear God or care what people think, yet, because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice, so that she won't eventually come and attack me." And the Lord said, "Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice, and quickly. However, when the Son of Man," that's Jesus, "comes, when he comes back, will he find faith on the earth?" And so when you think about this parable and the context of the parable written to these disciples who need hope and they need something concrete in the time of their oppression, when you think about our world right now, you have to, Jesus says, here's what you have to ask yourself. Have you stopped praying, Westown? Have you stopped praying? And have you lost heart? Have you? Because obviously implicit in this is there's a real possibility that everyone in this room can stop praying. They will not continue in prayer, and you will lose heart. And maybe that's you this morning. You've just stopped, and you've lost heart. And Jesus comes to you this morning and gives you a story. And when you've decided, my prayers don't even make it to the ceiling of my room. And you know what? Maybe it's not oppression, but maybe it's just prayer seems irrelevant. Or maybe you feel like God has completely forgotten you. And he's out of control, or life is out of control. When you look at this, I think the way he brings this message home to us this morning is stunning. Because from the very beginning, could you put yourself into the shoes of the Hebrews? And, you know, he's encouraging his people to continue to pray, but he starts the story with a judge being, there was a judge who what? Did not fear God. What does Jesus say? Here's the law. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. So here's a judge who doesn't love God, neither fears God nor fears people. And if you're an attorney, you don't want to go to this judge, right? If you're an attorney, you're thinking, oh gosh, this courtroom scene isn't good. What Jesus is describing is off. I mean, it seems utterly dysfunctional. What's going on in the courtroom, boy, whatever is going on, they are in trouble. And so he introduces what? He introduces a judge who does not fear God and who does not respect people. But then it gets worse, because then who does he introduce into the story? A widow. Here's an unjust judge and a widow, right? This is the perfect picture of a person who what? Who does not have resource. I mean, particularly in the first century. They have no resource, and they have no influence. And they're coming into the courtroom to the unjust judge? Wait, this is not going to work out well. I mean, this is what Jesus is trying to describe. This is really bad. She is marginal, no influence. And she's coming to a person who doesn't either love God or love people. Just doesn't. And Jesus tells us that she keeps coming and coming and coming, and she will not leave the judge until what? Until he breaks. Until what? Until she is annoying enough, right? She bothers this unjust judge enough to where he's just like, I've had it. The sound of her voice, whatever. Take it. Okay, you got it. And so, you know, you're kind of left with that. And, you know, if you just read that, you'd ask yourself, well, what does this mean then? What is Jesus trying to say? I mean, what are we supposed to pull from this? He tells us how what? This story is supposed to help believers who feel hopeless right now to not lose heart and to keep praying. So the first thing he's trying to tell us is this. So in this description, you know what God isn't? God is not this. He's not an unjust judge. He's not. And he sets it up as a contrast. Okay, so if this unjust judge will respond to prayer, the persistent prayer of a widow, who do you know God to be? He's our Father, right? That's the contrast. It's because will not God give justice to what? To his elect? To his kids? Who cry to him night and day? When you're hopeless, though, what happens when you're hopeless? You have a hard time believing that he is your loving Father. You want to believe that he is an unjust judge, right? And you feel like, no, this isn't right. And so you stop talking to him. But here's what we know the scripture says. God is what? God is more ready to answer your prayer than you are ready to ask it. If you see him as an unjust judge, that's horrible theology. Jesus is saying, you are my elect. I have chosen you, right? And many of us think, you know what? He's not interested. He overlooks me. He's forgotten about me. But you know what? When you're hopeless and you're despairing because of the hard situation that you're in or that our world is in, you have a hard time believing that he would answer your prayer. But he is your loving Father. He is the one who has died for you. He is waiting what? He is waiting to be gracious. But the problem is many of us can't see it right now because we're blinded by our hopelessness. We're blinded by feeling that we have been forgotten. Because the second thing is that he describes us as a widow. We're not. We are not widows. So he's trying to say, here's a terrible situation, an unjust judge with a widow. It's not even close to that. Here's the situation. The situation is you have a good and loving Father. And what? Go to our second point. You are not a widow without resource. You are what? You are the beloved. That's what he's trying to say. Let me set this up. I'm going to give you worst case scenario. Unjust judge with a widow. It's not even close to that. Here's the situation. A loving Father who what? Built you a house. Who then built you a playground. Who what? Then saved for your college. Who then what? He makes sure that there's food and a table set so you have dinner as a family. And you know what he does? He takes you and makes sure that, hey, you participate in whatever sport or activity you want. And he thinks about you. And then when he gets home, he asks you how your day was. That's how loved you are. But you know what? We can forget that. We can forget that before you existed, he loved you. He made you, right? He in his mind, right, before the foundations of the world, he had plans for you. He loved you before you even existed. He adopted you into his family, and he said, you know what? You're getting all of the inheritance. Yeah, you see my 401k? You see my retirement account? And how many billions of dollars? You get all of it. And I am so excited to give it to you. You are not a widow. You are the beloved of God. And so many times we forget that you are chosen and that you are his elect. And he has set his love on you before the foundation of the world. Now, let's talk about prayer there. What would persistence in prayer look like if you realized you're the loved son or daughter and you're talking to your dad? Who wants to bless you? Who wants to respond to you? You think you'd pray more? Do you pray, Westtown? Have you stopped praying? Jesus is looking at his disciples saying, please, I'm going to set this thing up. Because I want to remind you of the truth. Because we can get lost. Not only that, what does he say? Will not God give justice? Right? He says, no, you're going to get justice, and it's going to be quickly. That's what he says in verse 7. And will not God bring about justice for his kids, you and I, who cry out to him night and day? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that you and I, they, the kids of God, get justice and quickly. It reminds us that what? That God will what? That when you are praying, right? The very prayer that you pray is the stimulus that the Father needs to respond. He uses your prayers. So here's how it's described in Corinthians and in Revelation. You know what it's like? Your prayers are like incense. What if you thought of your prayers as you walk into Bath and Body Works, right? I mean, what happens in there? I mean, you're smelling everything, right? I mean, there's so many aromas in there. But what happens to you when you smell? I mean, that's a sense, right? You smell, and God says, I smell the aroma of your prayers. And you know what a good dad does? He responds. He responds. And you know what I'm doing? Like Isaiah, will the crooked be made straight? Will the rough places be made plain? He says, that's what I'm doing. I am doing that. And you know the means by which my sovereign plan makes that happen? Your prayers. When you ask me to come down, like Jesus said, remember his Lord's Prayer, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come down. When you pray the Lord's Prayer and ask heaven to come down to earth, that's the means by which God says, hey, when you pray, I respond because I'm a dad. And when your kid asks for something, you respond. Now, the answer we know to prayer is it's yes, as a good father will say yes many times. A good father says no many times, and a good father says wait many times. But it is my plan. And so we need to remember, our next slide, that Jesus is coming, and he is coming to set everything right. And so if you think about Jesus, and you think about his coming as a response to your prayers, what does he want us to do in response to the coronavirus? Pray. What does he want you to do when you see an ailment with your kid? You pray. What does he want you to do when you feel insecure about your work? You pray. What does he want you to do when you see an opportunity for you to be used? He says, pray. Never, ever, ever, right? Give up. The widow just kept coming and coming and coming, and he could say no 800 ways, and she's coming the 801st time. And he says, that's the way you need to pray. And when you do that, you don't even realize, Jesus is saying, you don't even realize how I come in response to that. Remember, you know, he says here, you know, that he would come and he would come quickly. And some of us, I know we struggle with that. Because some of you say, well, okay, Frank, it's been 2,000 years, right? Like, hello, right? This doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But remember, Jesus had his 12 and then he had his closest three. This is what Peter says. Do not measure or judge the Lord as you would a man, because for our Lord, a day is 1,000 years. And 1,000 years is like one day. Right? You can't understand it. But he is coming, and he has come quickly. And he will what? He will make the rough places plain. Because when he first came, think about what he did. He brought justice. How? I mean, how did he make things right? He took the injustice that you committed, right? And what did he do? There had to be a penalty for sin. And so what did Jesus do? He goes, I need to make things right. Penalties for sin brings justice. So here's what I'm going to do for you, West Towner. All the injustice that you've committed in your life, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bear it. All the things that you've done wrong, I'm going to take the penalty. Because if I take the penalty, you know what it makes it? It makes it right. It makes it just. So I am going to take what? I'm going to take the time that you cursed out your mom and that you cheated on your wife or your husband or you lied or whatever. All those skeletons that we have all in our closets in this room. The unjust things that you've done. And he says, I'm going to make it right. I'm going to make the rough places plain in your life. So I will take it upon myself. And that's what he did. And we're walking towards Easter Sunday. And Easter Sunday is all about justice. It's all about bringing justice to the world. So when he first came, he bore our injustice so that we don't what? We do not get what we deserve. And he got what he didn't deserve. And the second time, the scriptures say, he's going to make all things right by what? He's going to bring justice by giving us blessings that we don't deserve. So he's going to destroy all of Satan and all of the broken world and make things right, but then he's going to give us a new heavens and a new earth that we absolutely don't deserve. And so Jesus is saying to you and to me, I am bringing about justice for you, my kids, my chosen kids, who cry out to him day and night. Have you stopped praying? Have you stopped? Because he knows it's very possible for us on a dime to stop praying. Why? Because we get hopeless. We lose hope. We stare at the television and we think, what's happening, right? What is really going on? We think, God, what are you doing? In 11th grade, I got to go on a missions trip to Jamaica. And I remember this Jamaican pastor talking about God's timing and God bringing justice to the world. He said this, the Lord may not come when you want him, but he's always on time, man. Right? Yeah, man. He's always on time, man. He may not come when you want him, but you know what? I've got an on-time God, right? And so when you think about what God has for you, do you believe that your prayers literally pull heaven down to earth? And they're the means by which God will change your son. They're the means by which God will change your father. That God will change whatever vice you have right now. Because some of us have stopped praying and he's like, please, I'm going to make the rough place plain. I'm going to make the crooked straight. And you know how I do it? Your prayers. Your prayers that you've stopped praying, those are the, I'm just a dad, he's saying to us. I'm just a dad that responds to his kids. And so every time you talk to me, I'm a dad and I'm going to respond to you because I love you. And you already have a room, and I made that playground for you, and I made all this future for you. So talk to me. Tell me. Ask me. Confess to me. But he knows, like Peter, right? After Jesus is arrested, he can look around and say, no, no, no. Oh, my goodness. The Romans won. He's dead. Were you a part of this posse, Peter? No, I don't know who Jesus is. He denies him three times. He knows that we can stop praying so quickly. He knows that you can turn on the television and see these reports about the coronavirus, and we don't know how it's going to stop. And you think, oh, my goodness, this will overwhelm me. All I can see, right? God isn't just. Why would I pray to an unjust God, right? Why would I pray to a God who he's just a fifth grader with a magnifying glass, and I'm the ant, right? I mean, that's it, right? That's all God is. Hey, it's easy. You can move there quickly. You don't understand, but Jesus says, do you trust me? Because some of you have lost heart and you stopped praying. Because it leads us up finally to the very final phrase that just asks us, when the Son of Man, when Jesus comes back, will he find you and me? Will he find faith on the earth? And what is faith? When you think about faith, what does it do? Because faith points. If you think about it, this whole idea of faith, it points. And where does it point? It points away from yourself. Always faith. Because when you have faith, when you trust God in prayer, right, it points you away from yourself to what? God's word. Anytime you have faith and you pray, it points you away from yourself and to God's promises. When you think about prayer, it points you, faith points you away from yourself and right to God's Son. So what he says is, prayer is the means. And what would happen if tonight, tomorrow, you're in your office or whatever, and you say, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I've stopped praying, and you drop to your knees and you tell God, I'm sorry, I've stopped praying. I'm starting again. Right? And it's amazing. You can pray for all kinds of things, and God will use that to change the situation. But you know what he also does? He uses prayer to change you. Because your relationship with God will change if you pray more. And you know what else happens? Is that when you are praying and you're having this conversation with God and you're relying upon, you begin to become contagious. Because you know what happens? There's an identity. There's an acceptance of who you are. There's an ability to receive forgiveness. And I tell you what, the world longs for that stuff. Because we're in turmoil right now. And people don't know which way's up. And I think a lot of people went back to church this Sunday after this week. And they're like, what is going on? And Jesus says, you trust me, right? So when I come back, here's what I want for my church. I want you to be in this posture of prayer. And not just prayer, not just big prayers, but persistent, right? Every day, right? I'm going to get up and you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make the donuts. Right? I'm going to get up and I'm going to make the donuts. I'm going to get up and I'm going to make, because you're persistent and you never, ever, ever give up. Because it seems like the Germans are going to win. But if we never give up, I guarantee you what, we will win. The Allied forces will win. When the Son of Man comes, the question is, will he find faith on earth? A ragtag group of persistent prayers. I love this illustration in Tim Keller's book on prayer. He says, the 20th century Norwegian pastor, Hallesby, likens prayer to mining, as he knew it in Norway. Demolition to create mine shafts took two basic kinds of actions. There are long periods of time, he writes, when the deep holes are being bored with great effort into the hard rock. To bore the holes deeply enough into the most strategic spots for removing the main body of rock was work that took patience, steadiness, and a great deal of skill. Once the holes were finished, however, the shot was inserted and connected to a fuse. To light the fuse and fire the shot is not only easy, but also very interesting. One sees results. Shots resound and pieces fly in every direction. He concludes that while the more painstaking work takes both skill and patient strength of character, anybody can light a fuse. Here's what Keller says. He says, this illustration warns us against doing only fuse lighting prayers, the kind that we soon drop if we don't get immediate results. And some of us only pray those prayers. It's a fuse lighting. I just want to see the pop. I want to see the rocks move. And if I'm praying, if I see that, I'll keep praying, right? And some of us say, that's the kind of prayer that I'm about. No. If we believe both in the power of prayer and in the wisdom of God, we will have a patient prayer life of hole boring. Mature believers know that handling the tedium is part of what makes for effective prayers. We must avoid extremes of either not asking God for things or of thinking we can bend God's will to ours. We must combine tenacious praying, a striving with God, with deep acceptance of God's wise will. Some of us have stopped praying those long, steady prayers that maybe you will never, ever experience the result. Both my grandmothers lived long lives. I got the opportunity at the end of both their lives to kind of help with getting stuff together. Both my grandmothers prayed more than I realized. So I'm opening up Bibles that they had. There's some journals. You know, and then you look and you see 1981 praying for little Frankie. Or 1974, we pray that this man, this little boy, and you realize over the years, there was my two grandmothers. Not doing it in front of people, doing it behind closed doors. But man, were they persistent. And they kept on keeping on. and they prayed and they prayed and they prayed. And sometimes when I think about it, I think maybe it's those prayers, right? Those are the prayers that saved me, because God, their father, responded to the prayers of his two daughters, my two grandmothers, and they did it and they didn't stop. What if we prayed like that? What if you understood the power of prayer and the power of giving it over to God? I know that this is not a complex sermon. It's simple, but let me tell you what, it's not simplistic. Because I know we all want to give up. We all feel the ease of actually just losing hope and falling into the cave. And he says, don't. Don't, disciples. Peter, James, and John, you can't. I may be saying that to you this morning. Maybe you've stopped and he's saying, you can't stop. I'm going to use them, right? I'm going to use them and I will change the world through them. Do you pray? Do you believe in the power of prayer and how it points us to our need of Jesus and how he brings justice through his life, his death, and his resurrection? And that's what we're going to do now, because we're going to come to his table where Jesus is the host and he welcomes you. He wants you to know who he is, to be reminded of what he's done for you. But not only that, he wants to grow you. It's a means of grace by which we believe we are grown. So let's pray.